I want another baby so, so much. But this crippling fear is standing in the way. It's not that I don't want a baby with my partner, because she would be the most incredible mum and the most stunning pregnant woman. I tell her this all the time. I would love for her to see me with babies, because I feel like being a mum is what I was put on this earth to do, and I would love to do that with her. But I can't hide the worries that I have around it due to my life experience. I love my partner, but while sounding like I am completely contradicting myself here, I do live now with the knowledge that life can change abruptly and that children will feel any of your pain through life. If I could have been pregnant 6 months ago, I would have. The only reason I'm not? I live with a lot of anxiety around the fact that I'm just not quite sure if my environment is right for that just now, because my fear of what if it doesn't work out is creating an immense amount of pressure for me. It's ironic, isn't it, that these fears contradict my message for this entire book? But when there are children involved, I now know you have to be so, so careful. It's not just my life that would be affected by the introduction of a new baby or a possible relationship breakdown. I live knowing that I'll be fine no matter what. If my partner and I did decide to have a baby one day and we were to part later down the track, I know I'll be fine. But what about this child? How do you make that decision for someone's future? Is it fair to bring a child in when there's uncertainty? And is this uncertainty something I'm going to feel forever due to my past? Is it natural for me to feel like that having separated once before? If I was on my own right now, I would comfortably have a baby by myself. If I could do it on my own, I'd be pregnant right now, raising my family in my own little bubble. I'd be sitting here with my baby, and it's my baby. Sounding selfish and incredibly unfair to my partner? No. It's me pushing people away to protect those I love. A baby on my own makes the most sense currently. That way, no one else gets hurt in the process. The baby's not living between two homes. There's no risk of my partner getting hurt. I'm not able to let anyone down again. But I am with a woman, and I love a woman. And we talk about children, and I want to give her that life. My uncertainty truly has nothing to do with her or us. It's about my own insecurities around letting people down again. I love my relationship and I love my partner, but I have a fear of committing to someone long-term with children because of the separation I went through with Jared. Whilst things with us are amazing now and what we have is great, I know how much I struggled internally when I did begin to start having doubts about my marriage. When those thoughts came in, they were totally out of my control. I knew I was falling out of love, that I was having a change of mind, a change of heart. Yet I was helpless to stop it happening, regardless of how much I knew my decisions were going to impact my children's lives. Life has shown me that you can love someone more than you've ever loved anyone else, and you can have a blissful life with them, but that can change at any time. My uncertainty isn't about her or us. It's about whether or not I want to take that risk when I don't know what's coming next. So many things in life are completely out of our control, and it is terrifying to think about other people, children, being affected by my choices. But I also know I can't be a slave to that mindset my whole life, because I know I would be limiting myself. I could be missing out on so much happiness. Chapter 24. It does take a very special person to come into a dynamic like Jared and I have these days, and my partner is 100% that very special person. She sees beauty in the family connection Jared and I have created and the way we parent together as a united team now. Whenever he comes to get the kids, he knows everyone's coffee orders and he always brings us one, stays for a chat. We are all family, and he and I will always be family. And the gorgeous partner Jared has now brought into our circle, one who is not threatened by the strength of our connection, one who sees it for simply what it is, has only made our family unit stronger. Very early on, when we were first discussing separating, Jared and I made a pinky promise that we would have a no dickheads policy when it came to dating. If either of us was seeing someone who had an issue with how we run things, they didn't get to come into our lives. It just wouldn't work because we wouldn't allow this dynamic to change for the sake of our kids and for the sake of our whole family unit. People tried to warn me that things might change if and when Jared got a girlfriend, but I wanted nothing more than for Jared to be happy and for there to be another extended member of our family, and I couldn't be happier for him to now have that, to have found the same love that I have. For my kids to have another incredible woman in their life, another role model to lean on and be guided by, another person to love them. How could that possibly be seen as a negative? My good friend's mum, who's gay, has really inspired and driven the way Jared and I have decided to shape our lives because I grew up in my 20s watching the way this incredible woman and her ex-partner navigate their own family dynamic. They split up when my friend was around 10 or 11, and coming from a big Lebanese family, it wouldn't have been a surprise if the mum had been ostracised for leaving her husband to chase love with a woman. But it didn't go that way. It was the total opposite, and my friend's mum and dad are best friends still to this day. She's never once had to doubt her place within that loving family. They always said it didn't matter that they weren't married anymore. It didn't matter that they didn't have those rings on their fingers. They were family. Jared and I, aware of life's unpredictability and the roller coaster ride it can take you on, always said if we ever broke up, that's how we wanted to be. Mum, Dad, and our partners all sitting around having a laugh, with nothing but love and respect for everyone around. It's quite ironic that our life did, in fact, follow the same path, mimicking these people whose devotion to love and family, however it looks, inspired us for so many years. I'm not naive to the fact that this isn't possible in every situation. When there's cheating, abuse, betrayal, people end up hating each other. That does happen, and I am very aware that Jared and I are so incredibly blessed that we actually still really like each other as people. We're still so in tune with each other on an emotional level, but it's not a romantic love anymore. Some people have even joked, "Oh, you two are still together, you just don't have sex with each other." But what we have has developed well beyond romance. In fact, I probably see him as more like my brother, someone I want to support in every life endeavour, when nothing he could tell me would ever make me turn against him. I am as close to him as I am my own mum, my dad, my sisters. Likewise, our families will always be family too, connected by two little angels going by the names of Bobby and Florence. I will forever call my father-in-law Dad. Jared's sister and his brother are forever my sister and brother as well, and he'll never lose my mum as his devoted mother-in-law. We are always supporting each other's happiness, no matter how that looks, from the day our lives started to head in different directions until the day we die. That is nothing short of beautiful, and I am forever grateful for my life. I see some people dealing with absolute asshole partners, and I am very thankful every day that I met Jared. No, our marriage didn't work out, but our friendship did. Our lives did. Our children did. Our respect for each other will outlive any marriage certificate. I've got two beautiful children with the most incredible dad. Society wants to tell us that that's failure, but how have we failed? We have to start shifting the narrative, and I'm determined to do that for my children. We need to celebrate the intent behind marriage, because intending to spend your life with someone itself is a massive achievement, as is couples respectfully realizing that they've come as far as they could as one. Both deserve praise. Jared and I always agreed that we could have stayed together. It would not have been us, though, because it goes against what we both believe in, living your true life and being your authentic self. Whilst our grandparents would have probably thought us staying together was the way to provide our kids with the best life, I completely disagree. We are giving the kids their best life by doing this. We are showing them what it looks like to live a happy, fulfilled life as individuals, stepping away from each other in order to come together in different ways. I want them to see their mama, the mama who took a chance, who was willing to take risks in life. A mama who was not afraid to make mistakes, one who shows them that growth can be painful and change can be scary, but not as scary and painful as staying somewhere you know you don't want to be. Do you want to risk holding on for too long? Jared and I had asked each other. Do we risk ending up miserable and tense together? Or do we go our separate ways and see what happens? When we did initially break up, we honestly didn't go into it thinking we were done for good, that we'd never get back together. We were genuinely taking some time to explore and live apart to see how it played out. We would have loved if, a few years down the track, we reunited, but we were also very aware that that may not happen. As it turned out, the freedom we allowed each other to have ended up coming at exactly the right time. I'm also so proud that we're raising our kids to be such open-minded, accepting, and loving people. The environment I grew up in was not one that I would call homophobic, but I can see now that I did lead a very sheltered existence for most of my life. So it's extremely important to me and to Jared that our kids are raised, exposed to every type of unique human to walk this earth. I want them to see that nothing is off limits in life, that the choices and possibilities are there to create, and they are endless. And I certainly don't want to rob them of their queerness, something that I feel society did to me. To that end, we've been very open with all types of humans since my kids were born. Bobby and Florence have been surrounded by wonderful gay friends of ours since they were born, so they know no different in their upbringing, and it's not as if I have to introduce them to some mysterious LGBTQIA+ world because it's happening all around them. It's just a normal part of life as they know it. We've always been very open about the fact that girls can kiss girls, boys can kiss boys, men can marry each other, boys can wear dresses and can live life as a female. And that all of that is not only okay, it's great. It's normal. It's incredible to see how accepting Bobby is. When all the kids at school were saying they had girlfriends, one day he said he had a boyfriend instead. Whether he did or not, I don't know, but his home environment has let him to understand how okay that was and gave him the confidence to say it to his peers. My son is just incredible at being so open-minded. I honestly think he was born that way, which is beautiful. But I also believe that we, as parents, have instilled in him this absolute inherent acceptance of everyone. I am also proud of the acceptance I am now seeing from my daughter. Day by day, she is understanding that one can choose to live life however they please and not just what she sees on TV. Obviously, seeing me with female partners goes a long way to normalising every kind of relationship too, and it has always been so important to me to be honest from the start. I've had 3 actual girlfriends, and whenever they were first introduced to the kids, I didn't try to hide what those relationships were or twist the truth in any way. I would tell the kids, "This is Mummy's girlfriend, and Mummy loves her." The first relationship I had with a woman, who is now one of my good friends, was very open and fluid, and while we didn't use labels, I didn't want to confuse the kids, so they knew that she was someone very important in our house and that she was very special and, again, that Mummy loved her. I don't believe children need a lot of labels to understand what's going on. They just need to know that they are safe and that the people around them and love each other. I've also been very honest with the kids when relationships have ended because they have seen when I am hurt, watched as I've cried, and they deserve to know what is causing Mummy pain and why these people they have come to love too are suddenly never there. I know we really loved spending time with this person, but they won't be coming over anymore because our relationship ended. I remember Bobby saying to me once, "Did you broke up?" "Yes, baby, we broke up," I told him. You're crying because you broke up? Did she dump you? Ouch, babe. Yes, she did. The impact that this has had on my kids is something I was so fearful about when Jared and I were deciding to separate and I was about to explore my sexuality. I remember crying to him in the car, and I wasn't crying for me. I was crying for my children, for the fact that decisions I was making would affect them. Were my children going to get bullied at school because of a choice I made? It was really difficult because I wanted to explore this part of myself I'd never known existed, and I wanted to be that example for my children, to encourage them to live life and own who they are. But at the same time, I didn't want Bobby and Florence getting picked on because, your mum's a lesbian, your mum's a lesbian. But with the direction we've chosen to raise our children, I am confident that they will simply say, yeah, so what? Shrug their shoulders and run off to play. Bobby had a few of his little friends sleep over for his birthday last year, and I popped them into my and my partner's bed to watch a movie. While I was turning on the TV, one of them asked me, who sleeps in here? Maddie and I sleep in here, I replied. Oh, why do you and Maddie sleep in here? Because they're gay, said Bobby very casually. Yeah, they're girlfriends, said another friend with a shrug. This was before we got engaged, obviously. Oh, okay, cool. And that was it. No giggling or whispering. No cries of, ew, yuck. They just turned on the Addams Family, and as they were watching it, I realised we are doing something so good here. I'm so excited for the next generation after hearing that conversation, and so proud of Bobby and his little group of 7-year-old mates. Yep, we're doing something right. Chapter 25. Going on a reality TV show isn't something I ever planned for myself. But on the back of everything I'd been through over the past few years, it's what life had threw my way at the end of 2021. Around September, I was preparing to head into one of the most highly applied for reality game shows in the world, Survivor. It's one of my all-time favourite shows. I've loved it ever since I was a little girl. I remember being around 9 years old, and when my mum thought I was in bed, I'd sneak out to the back lounge room and watch those early American seasons. I've literally watched every season, not one I've ever missed, and I know all the cast members, I know the game back to front. I'd never even considered actually going on the show, though, as being a self-proclaimed princess when it comes to the outdoors is in my blood. I'm never one to go on rides, even now at 31, you won't even get me on a Ferris wheel. And I'm quite content to never write adrenaline junkie in my Tinder bio. I like my feet on the ground, I like comfort, and I own my silkiness when it comes to my fear of certain crawly creatures. So when I first got a call in late 2019 asking me to go on Survivor, it started as a big joke between myself, my colleagues, and my friends. Before I got that phone call, though, I'd recently gone through another life-changing event that had shifted my entire outlook on my world. And as a result, my thoughts around the opportunity began to shift the more I considered it. I had never been able to travel without Jared since my diagnosis with postnatal depression in 2014. He was my security blanket. I developed an extreme fear of flying, and even the thought of being in a hotel room up in Sydney on my own for a work trip was a petrifying thought. I would get anxiety if I was ever on my own. I couldn't sleep without my children next to me. I physically needed people around me. I didn't like being on my own because I would get so into my own dark thoughts that I'd create a panic within my own brain. It sounds crazy, and maybe I was for a while there, but when you're in it, suffocating, it's terrifying. So if I ever had to go away, even just to Sydney for a day trip for work, most of the time Jared would come with me. And if he didn't, I'd have to be highly medicated because I just couldn't function existing on my own in those moments. But at around the time all these huge changes started happening in my life and Jared and I started to make some decisions about what we were doing and where our relationship was going, I decided to take Bobby for a holiday. Just me and him having some mum-son time. It sounds random, but it wasn't completely. I'd been inspired after talking to one of Jared's aunties, who has a tradition of taking each of her teenage children on a solo bonding trip every year. She was happily married, but very independent, and she and her husband were really cool, fun, super adventurous people. And these trips they took didn't necessarily have to be anything extravagant, but she shared with me that the bonding time she had with each child was really special. It was important for her to have those initial life experiences with each of her children. I really loved the idea that they'd go and create those amazing memories together, and I wanted to have that for my children and my life too. It also stemmed from the fact that I'd never had the chance to really travel either. Whilst all my friends were doing Contiki's and packing up and moving to London, I was at home changing nappies. And yes, the thought of doing it scared the shit out of me, but I lived with a lot of regret that I'd never solo travelled at all. It was time. "I think I want to go somewhere with Bobby when he's 5, I told Jared one night in early 2019, with Bobby's birthday fast approaching. Jared, of course, supported the idea. So the next night at the dinner table, I said to Bobby, "Mummy wants to take you on a holiday. Where is somewhere in the world you want to go? You can choose anywhere, just you and me." He paused to think for only a minute. "Japan," said my then 4-year-old. "Why Japan?" "I like eating sushi." So I looked into it the very next day, knowing I would develop an intense amount of anxiety about being a woman travelling on her own with a child. Yet, after a lot of research and feedback from others who'd done it, I discovered that Japan is a really safe place to travel. Within a few days, Bobby and I went to the travel agency where a friend of mine worked, and we booked a trip, right there on the spot. Handing over my card and paying for it so quickly was a pretty big thing for me, because it was real after that. It was happening, whether I liked it or not. I was one step closer than I'd ever been to this kind of adventure. It was something I, the previous Sophie, had never been able to fathom possibly doing, but here I was, doing it. We were doing it. My mum didn't really get it when I told her. "What do you mean?" she asked when I told her my exciting news. "What about Florence? She's only a baby." "Well, Mum, she'll be at home with her dad, so she'll be fine," I replied. "But why are you leaving her out?" My mum struggled to understand that I would do the same thing for Floss when she turned 5, that I would let her pick somewhere to go and we'd have a trip, just the two of us. She couldn't quite comprehend why we weren't all going as a family, why I'd want to do something for myself. It was just a generational thing, I know, but I wish she'd said something like, "Oh, that's amazing, Soph, go for it," rather than questioning my motives and reminding me of the responsibilities here, like I was doing something wrong. In the days leading up to the trip, I had severe anxiety. I would cry hysterically. I kept wondering if I should just cancel the whole thing. Even the night before, I was completely hysterical and riddled with fear, making such a huge move in my life. "I can't do this," I sobbed to Jared. "I can't do it." He was my biggest supporter, as always. "Go, Soph. It's going to be amazing." He was always so positive. Saying goodbye to 2-year-old Florence was difficult. My anxiety was choking me high in my throat, suffocating me until the moment I walked through the gate. We scanned our passports, and then it was just me and Bobby. And in that instant, I went from anxious mess to survival mode. It was the challenge I knew I needed to grow. Now you are in control. You are in charge. There is no one here to help you. So get your shit together and let's go and have an amazing trip. The second the family was gone and it was just Bobby and me walking through the international airport, I went into protection mode. Powerful mum mode. And I thought, we are going to do this, buddy. There was no turning back. Our flight was due to land at Tokyo really late at night, so I'd spoken to my travel agent about how we would get from the airport to our accommodation. "It'll be fine," she assured me. "When you walk out of the airport, there's a big bus and train station. You just jump on a train and it'll take you straight to your hotel. It's so easy. After making our way through immigration, we walked out of the gates, me dragging two giant suitcases while Bobby carried his own little case, plus a backpack, and approached the busiest bus, train stop I've ever seen in my life. Every sign was in Japanese, not one word of English anywhere. Hundreds of people busily making their way to their transport. Oh, fuck. This is where Jared would usually step in and take control of the situation. Whenever we'd gone anywhere, he took care of us. He was the protector, and if anything went wrong, it was always going to turn out fine because Jared was there to sort it out. But this time, he wasn't there. This was all up to me. At this point, I normally would have burst into tears, freaking out about what we were going to do. But again, I had no choice. And it's exactly why I had put myself in this position. Right. You can do this, Soph. You are going to figure this out. I was going from bus terminal, trying to read the maps and signs, showing my itinerary to every bus driver who pulled up. Mind you, it was in English, so not at all helpful. I knew the hotel was near Disneyland and found someone who knew enough English to tell me that trains and buses to the amusement park had stopped for the night. Fuck. Bigger fuck. Obviously, I knew I could get a taxi if I needed to. I knew that we would get there eventually. But reality hit very quickly that I had to figure this out on my own. And I did. I did work it out. We had to change buses halfway there, but we made it, and I rang Jared immediately, ecstatic that I'd done this on my own. That was only the first day, and I knew it was going to be such a good trip because Sophie from 2 years earlier could never have done what I had just done. What might appear to be a fairly standard travel experience was me putting my then self in my worst real-life nightmare. When you've suffered with severe anxiety your whole life and you have constantly relied on others to be your security and your comfort, stepping out by yourself in an airport on the other side of the world with no one who is able to help you, not able to speak the language, not to mention having an exhausted 5-year-old in tow who's just sat on a plane for 11 hours and needs food, toilet, and bed. Well, that's a huge accomplishment. It was an empowering moment and the beginning of me discovering the Sophie that was inside. We spent 12 days traveling around Japan. We started in Tokyo and caught fast trains to Osaka and Kyoto. Kyoto was one of my favourite places to visit because we were staying in a very quiet area near these vibrant night markets, and it just had a really calm vibe, one I never thought I'd experience with the anxiety that I'd suffered for too long. There was something so sweet about Kyoto as a city, and Bobby and I would walk the streets till 11 o'clock at night, buying food from market stalls and really taking in the culture, and not once did I ever feel unsafe. We did all the essential kid activities, Universal Studios and Disneyland. We went to these crazy cafes with cats and monsters. Clearly a focus in my planning was to provide Bobby with some memorable experiences. But I did decide I wanted to take one day for me, to do some temple tours and to see the bamboo forest, so I hired a tour guide to take us around. She met us in the lobby and the three of us had breakfast together before we headed out to see the sights. About halfway through the day, 3 or 4 hours into the one-on-two tour, Bobby tugged at my sleeve. "Mummy, why does this lady not stop talking? She's so annoying. Why won't she stop speaking to us?" It still makes me laugh out loud to this moment. He had no idea that she was a tour guide I'd hired and she was simply doing her job. He thought we'd just picked up a stranger at breakfast. "That's her job, darling," I laughed. "Poor thing." Seeing and experiencing Japanese culture was pure magic, and I made sure that Bobby and I dived deep into it where we could. But none of that is what I really took away from the trip. It was the bonding opportunity with my son, the one-on-one chats on the train rides, learning more about each other as every day passed, the pride I had seeing him walk so far in one day. It was the empowerment of seeing that, yes, I can do this on my own. It was the independence that began to grow within. Watching my son adapt and gain his own independence let me know again that this trip was life-changing. Bobby was a star the whole trip, carrying his own things and never once complaining. I have a photo of him at a very busy train station, his backpack full, his heavy suitcase in hand, and he's carrying it up about 100 steps. He did it because he had to, because I had a backpack of my own and two big suitcases. He had no choice but to step up, just like his mama did. Normally, if we're at home and I ask him to help with the shopping out of the car or something, he'll say, "No, Mom, it's too heavy," as most five-year-olds would. But in that moment, Bobby instinctively knew he had no choice but to carry his own suitcase, that he needed to play his part and help Mama with the load in order to get to where we needed to go. And it was a really moving thing to witness. He didn't complain once, not once, on the whole trip. And again, it's because neither of us had a choice. We knew we had to do it, and we knew we had to do it together. And I think that's a poignant theme from both the trip and life. You're going to get through it. No matter how far it seems you have to climb or how heavy the load may feel, you've just got to get on with it and you will make it through. I came back from that trip a totally different person. I proved to myself that I can be alone. I can raise my children on my own. I can work. I can travel. I can be financially independent. I proved to myself that I could do it all. I learned so much about the significance of Buddhism and the lotus flowers during my travels there, and returned to have a design of both tattooed on my arm, blending the powerful symbols of enlightenment. I took inspiration of rebirth and new existence from Buddhism and combined it with the lotus flower, revered for its ability to bloom into a pure, gorgeous flower despite rising from dirty water. That trip was in 2019, a year when there were obviously plenty of other life-altering things going on for me and my identity. But without that experience, I wouldn't be the woman I am today, and I certainly wouldn't have said yes to going on Survivor 2 years later. Soon after Bobby and I returned home, my management team came to me with an opportunity that I never could have imagined myself doing in the past. They knew people that worked with Survivor who wanted me to go on the show. My instant reaction was, fuck no. Like I said, I'm usually a sook in terms of things like cold water, being tired, bugs and spiders. All jokes aside, I do suffer from severe arachnophobia. In the past, I've simply avoided doing things that scared me. I've never liked going too far out in the ocean because I'm scared I'll either drown or get eaten by a shark, for instance. Or I wouldn't go on a ride in case it breaks and I die and I end up on the front page of the papers because the carousel blew up. You know, ridiculous things like that. It's just how I've always been and I'm okay with it. But it was the thought of being away from people with absolutely no contact that terrified me the most. I've always had my safety blankets around me. For such a long period of time, Jared was my safety blanket, and after we separated, my children became my safety blanket. So Survivor is something I would never have considered in the past out of fear of being so alone. It just wasn't something the old Sophie could ever possibly do. But after that trip to Japan with Bobby, I had changed. The idea of challenging myself now excited me because I knew that when I faced my fears head on, the pride I felt for overcoming them was absolutely worth it. And so I agreed to have a conversation with the producers. It didn't eventuate in 2020, and that's fine, because it was clearly a shit show of a year for both me personally and for the world, and I honestly didn't give it too much thought. I was somewhat relieved, in a sense, but at the beginning of 2021, I got a call saying they wanted to chat to me again about the show. Oh, shit. I knew this time I had no excuses. Yes, I was again shit scared to do it. But by this stage, I was far more comfortable and confident within myself that I gave it deep consideration. I was about to be one of 24 people out of the thousands who apply to go on this show every year to step into the world of Survivor. So instead of focusing on the fears, the huntsman spiders that were going to crawl over me, the intense hunger, the cold, the physical challenges, and the distance from my children, I was looking at it thinking, what an incredible opportunity to discover even more about Sophie. Winning was never even a consideration because accepting the spot was already an achievement. Whether I lasted 2 days, 2 weeks, or 2 months out there, the fact that I was even ready to dive in and give it a go showed me just exactly how far I'd come. Fuck yeah. Chapter 26. I wasn't going into the survivor camp completely alone, though. Each season has a different theme, and the theme of my series was blood versus water. Contestants go into the game with a loved one and compete as a pair, but there is only one sole survivor, meaning at some stage, contestants will possibly have to compete against their loved ones. Originally, I was going to be cast with Jared, and we would be going on as an ex-husband and wife duo. My initial thoughts were that there's no one else in the world I would have wanted to do this with. I think he'd be brilliant at the game. He's competitive, rational, unemotional, and loyal as hell. I was also really excited to give him an opportunity to show his talents and to use so many of his incredible skills that he doesn't really get to use in everyday life. So, when it didn't eventuate, there was a casting clash with another contestant with too many similarities. It broke my heart. I wanted the opportunity for him more than anything, and it was devastating for him after such a rough few years. He was really excited about something for the first time in a long time, and it killed me when they said, "We want you, Soph, but we want another family member, or it's just not going to work." The producers asked me if I had someone else who would consider doing it, and my three sisters sprang to mind. There was no way either one of the twins would do it. One of them has 4 kids. She runs a very tight ship in her household. Her husband works night shift, so that just wouldn't have been possible. Her twin is the most gorgeous stay-at-home mum with her kids clinging to her like monkeys all the time. So again, there was just no way I thought she would do it. But my older sister, the one of my siblings I probably don't have the closest relationship with, is a massive Survivor fan, even more so than me. I called her up instantly, knowing that she'd appreciate that I'd thought of her in that moment. She burst into tears. "This has been a dream of mine, Soph," she said through her sniffles. "I'd love to do it with you." It was amazing because it was the green light I knew I needed in order to say yes to this opportunity. To be able to do something like that with my sister was pretty damn cool. But, if I'm to be honest, there have also been many times through my career and my life I haven't felt like she's been the most supportive sister to me. So I did have to face some unfavourable questions from some people around me and battle some inner demons in the lead up. We've faced a lot of troubles, especially when I was a teenager growing up and she wanted to so firmly play her traditional big sister role. Don't get me wrong, having been sisters now for 31 years, there is so much love and admiration. She and I were like the bookends of the family because the twins in the middle always had each other, and I've always felt like she worked overtime trying to make us have the same bond. There's an age gap between us of 6 or 7 years, and we have such different personalities, so at times I have struggled with that, but I instantly saw this as an incredible opportunity for us to go on the show and mend a few broken bridges from over the years. To come out of it, regardless of the result, as united sisters who shared an epic life experience together. To do that while we were both living out our childhood survivor dreams, enough said. As if going on a reality TV competition in the midst of a global pandemic wasn't enough, 2021 also turned out to be the year I fulfilled my dream of becoming a solo homeowner. Jared and I purchased our first home before having Bobby, and since then I have made multiple private and business investments, but this one was me buying for my babies. I'd bought us our first family home. Never in a million years had I ever imagined myself buying a 5-bedroom home with a pool by myself at 30 years old, but it's something I've worked hard towards over the past few years and something I've wanted to achieve for my kids' future. But oh my God, there was so much going on all at once. Within the space of 3 months, I was announcing my book deal and working on strict deadlines. I was buying my first home and beginning to renovate. Plus, I was preparing an insane amount of contractual work obligations and everyday social media content ready to go before disappearing to go on Survivor. I literally had to make 2 months' worth of Instagram stories and posts to be posted every single day because I didn't know how long I'd actually be in the competition for. That 60 days of content meticulously planned out and scheduled so nobody online would guess that I was anywhere but home. It's standard practice to sign some pretty heavy paperwork agreeing not to reveal you're part of the show until launch. Oh, and I was also doing my usual day-to-day stuff, being a mum, maintaining my relationship, putting food on the table, surviving. But while people would see me on Instagram in that time talking about PJs and going to the park with my kids, it was actually the most stressful, busiest time of my life. With my sleepwear and loungewear brand Keisha, I always wear and share new releases live on Insta, but with some new items launching in November and me not sure if I'd still be in the outback, we had to order pairs to be specially made and delivered in August so I could pre-film for launch day from my bedroom before I left. I also threw into the mix organising finances for a house purchase and planning a reno that would be happening when I wasn't in the state or even contactable by phone, because my renovation started about a week before I left for filming. So that was a real exercise in trust, handing over the reins to my PA to pay the invoices and manage budgets for my build, putting my trust in the designer and building company to run it all while I was gone, giving authority to my manager to make any and all life decisions on my behalf. And I know that really is a first world problem, how privileged I am to be able to do that. But anyone who's done a renovation would understand how nerve-wracking the experience is when you're bloody home, let alone out of contact. It was also just before heading off that Jared and I started official divorce proceedings, a move that brought up a lot of sadness for me. Even though we are in such an amazing place, I still became overwhelmed with emotion as I sat on the phone with my lawyer discussing the ins and outs of signing divorce papers. It didn't help that the Survivor producers had asked me at the time for some photos from our wedding and of us together with the kids when they were younger for my character piece. Going through old pictures was like pouring straight alcohol onto a wound as I looked back at how happy I was in those moments. It was sad because I didn't recognise that person anymore. That Sophie is gone now, and I was mourning her, the old me. I was mourning Jared, looking so happy and relaxed, and my babies when they were little, grieving for such a carefree time in our lives that was over. But as I was sorting through those images of happy family, holidays and Christmases together, I would catch myself and think, but Sophie, you actually still have all of that. We'd made a pact that we would always sleep over on Christmas night together. We'd always sleep over the night before the kids' birthdays. We'd spend Easter together. Nothing has really changed in our life other than we are not in a sexual relationship anymore. Yet still, I was feeling a strange sense of regret. What if I still love him? What if I threw my family away? Did I give this the best shot I could have given it? Is it normal to feel this way? I know we are a family, regardless of any piece of paper or any social norms, but divorce is still such a difficult thing to do, and my heart was heavy. Regardless of how amicable and respectful the situation is, divorce is still a brutal experience and so clinical. You sign here, now you sign this, and just like that, your marriage is over. The past year alone has been an incredibly unique time, and the Sophie from 2 years ago, the girl who was confused as to whether she liked boys or girls, didn't know whether she wanted to stay in a marriage, didn't know where she was at or what her future looked like, she couldn't have done everything I've done in the past 12 months. Even the girl who started writing this book has evolved over the process, developing into a more balanced, mature woman. I still don't know exactly what my future looks like, but everything I did, particularly in the 3 months before leaving for filming, shows my growth as a person. It demonstrates not only how I've been able to work hard and set myself up financially over the past few years, but also how independent I have become. I was about to head into 2 weeks quarantine, away from my children, away from my partner, about to hand my phone over to be disconnected from the world for the first time in forever. It was petrifying, but equally so enticing, because I know what that Japan trip with Bobby did for me. I know how it changed my entire outlook on life. And that was just a holiday. This was going to be such a different experience. I didn't know if I'd be gone for 3 days or 7 weeks, but that unknown element excited me. A few years ago, my ego probably would have stopped me from doing something like going on Survivor. I would have been too embarrassed. What if I failed at it? Or what if I suck? What if people don't like me and I get voted out immediately? Whereas now, I knew I was going to be able to take the piss out of myself if I got voted off first. I knew I'd be able to sit back and laugh and go, oh my God, we did 3 months of preparation for nothing. I had arrived at a place where I was so confident and comfortable in myself that if it didn't work out, it wouldn't matter, because just by accepting a place on the show, I was already further ahead than I had been 2 years earlier. I was already so proud of myself for committing to something like that, for signing a contract to hand over my life and not know what was going to happen. My body, in its most raw state, to be aired on national TV with no control over the outcome. Throughout a lot of the pre-production interviews, there had been a lot of talk about the prize money, but I can hand on heart say my decision to go on the show had nothing to do with the money. Whilst $500,000 would obviously be amazing, who would say no to that? I had no desire to play this game merely to chase money. Money for me can be made in so many other ways. I had already won simply by taking that plunge to take part in the show, and to sign up with my big sister was only going to strengthen our large family unit. Deciding to go on the show wasn't anything to do with being on television either, because I didn't need that notoriety. In fact, I'd been asked to go on multiple other shows previously and had little to no interest. I was instead excited about the challenge it presented and thought it could be another way to prove to myself just what I was capable of. My self-worth, drive and commitment to learning more about myself could never and will never be able to be measured in dollars or in fame. There is nothing I do now in life that is to impress anyone else. Anything I do it to impress myself. Nothing I do is to look showy for others, nor is it to boast. It's to make myself proud, myself only. And by doing that, I make my kids proud too. Deciding to go on Survivor was a huge step in how far I've come, maturity-wise, independence-wise, my ability to trust in myself and my ability in life. It is a testament to the evolution of Sophie as a woman. The Sophie who no longer fears failure, who instead fears regret for not going after exactly what she wants in life. And whilst I don't know what's around the corner, I still can't wait to see it. When the day finally came for me to fly to Queensland to quarantine for 2 weeks before heading to the Survivor camp, I said a tearful goodbye to the kids, hugging them tighter than I think I ever have before. It was heartbreaking to leave them behind for any amount of time, but I now knew that, yes, I really could do this, and the support system I had in place for them meant that they'd be more than fine. I could go out there on my own, and I would be so proud of myself. And they would be proud of me too. I waited until the last second to say goodbye, hoping it would make it somewhat easier with less time to fuss. I kissed my partner, hugged Jared, got down on my knees to give my babies one last squeeze before I went off for God only knew how long. As I stood up, wiping the tears from my face, I caught a glimpse of myself in the hallway mirror and I saw her. There she was, the woman I'd become, staring back at me, eyes brimming with the lessons of the past few years now etched onto my soul forever. In that gaze, I could see not only how far I'd come, but how far I would go again. I stood for just a moment, breathing her in. Then without another glance, I picked up my suitcase and headed out the front door. Epilogue. The sheer number of lessons I've learnt over the past few years kind of shocks me. How exciting if this is what life constantly teaches you. I've gone through so many changes in what is relatively a short amount of time, and I've grown so much as a mum, as a partner, as a woman, as a human. The discovery that I am attracted to women only scratches the surface of my transformation since the breakdown of my marriage. It's just one piece of the puzzle I've gradually been putting together, as is the hurt I experienced, my first painful breakup. It would be remiss of me to blame her alone for that hurt. Whilst a significant life experience, one I couldn't fathom at the time, was making me stronger, it was an unfortunate breaking point after the many years I'd spent awfully confused within my identity. Hindsight is a wonderful thing. It would have been great to know then how to recognize red flags early on, but I had to go through those experiences to learn how to identify when a situation or a relationship isn't a good fit for me. In not only relationships and friendships, but also business, you cannot ignore those flags when they pop up. You can't ignore those gut feelings telling you that something or someone is truly for you. Or that they're not. There were flags from the very start in some of my relationships. There were red flags in a business partnership that I had that completely fell apart. From the first meeting I had with them, I knew something wasn't right, but I didn't listen to my intuition. There were so many bloody red flags in my early circles of acquaintances that I ignored outright. But if I had accepted earlier on that these were just not my people, I might have saved myself a lot of heartache. But I also wouldn't have gained the knowledge that I now have. After everything I experienced in the past couple of years, I feel that I can now go confidently into my 30s, 40s, and beyond, trusting my intuition as my most supportive tool, knowing the truth by how it feels. I no longer afford people energy if they aren't deserving. Instead, I'm guided by my gut, steering me away from anything that threatens to shatter my peace. It can be hard to drown out the noise of society telling us what we should do and how we should be living long enough to listen to and really hear that inner knowing. I've always been open to life, open to experience. But looking back at who I was a decade ago, I can see just how truly unaware of life I was. I can say with conviction how proud I am of the person I am forever growing into. This wasn't just about realizing I am sexually and emotionally attracted to women. It was about all the changes I went through in almost every area of my life. Life threw me some of the hardest experiences I've ever encountered, just so I could prove to myself that I could survive them. Part of my healing and evolution through life has taught me how worthless it is to hold on to any angst. Holding ill feelings towards anyone only leaves you with heavy emotional baggage, dragging you down, the heaviness becoming painful as you carry it everywhere. While my growth has led me to losing people along the way, I live with no bad intentions toward anyone. I recognize now that I held on to some people for far too long. That little 5-year-old Sophie who desperately wanted to be seen. Even though we hadn't spoken in 10 months, I messaged that one ex ahead of the Tokyo Olympics to wish her the best of luck. Some people might wonder why I'd do that, but it wasn't in my nature not to reach out. I knew it would be difficult watching her on TV playing in the Olympics, something we'd discussed on many occasions. But there was a much bigger picture here than the fallout from our split. I've always been able to front up in moments of significance for people, and this life event of hers was far greater than what had transpired between us. I couldn't let this moment in your life go by without wishing you the best of luck, I wrote. I've seen how hard you've worked to be there, and I wish nothing but the best for you and the girls. I really hope it works out for you all. Simple, and friendly. She replied straight away, "Thank you, Soph. I really appreciate that. You seem happy. I'm glad. Stay well." I can only thank her for that and for the beautiful times we spent together. Nothing can ever take away these moments, and because of her, I am now a better, more devoted and supportive partner to my fiancé and a much healthier person than I was. The takeaway of my story isn't leave your husband and become a lesbian. It's to trust your gut, to chase down your dream, to scratch that itch, whatever that means for you, however it looks, you've got to do it. Trusting your intuition, allowing yourself to make choices purely based on your gut feeling and understanding of a situation, whether they make sense to you or not, that is the ultimate way to pay respect to yourself. Back yourself always, because in life, not everyone will. Nearly every day, I have people sliding into my DMs asking me for advice about how they too can leave relationships and follow their truth. And it's not just women that ask, it's men too, and people of all ages, everywhere from 18 to 65. Be honest in your communication, I tell them. Be accepting of your feelings, whether you want to feel them or not, and know that you are entitled to feel the way you feel. The fact you're writing this to me tells me you already have your answer, I always say. You already know exactly what you want to do. Acceptance is hard. And honestly, it can be really sad too. But ultimately, resisting life's changes will only stand in the way of finding your true happiness. In her book Untamed, which clearly had a huge impact on me, author Glennon Doyle recalls being out one day and seeing a woman she's attracted to. "Maybe in another life," she writes that she thought to herself that day, "as if I had more than one." A quote I now have proudly tattooed on my back. This isn't, "and Sophie lived happily ever after," by the way. My life isn't wrapped up in a pretty bow. I haven't found my forever. Because how can one know what the fuck forever looks like? From such a young age, I had such a clear future laid out in front of me, one that didn't go the way I'd once always envisaged. I'm learning now not to plan anything, to flow through life and let life flow through me. That way, when change comes, and it will always come, I am able to fly freely with it. You can do it too. I have found my now. Whatever happens tomorrow, whatever happens next year, I know I will be okay. I know I will survive. At 31, I desperately yearn for another baby. Is that what the universe has in store for me? Will my body allow me? Am I in a position to commit to another person the life of a child? We don't know the answers to those questions. To accept no certainty in life is to hold no expectations for yourself and the life you live. You don't have to commit to anything forever. If you're not happy in a situation, you always have the right to change your mind. You always have the right to want something else. Be okay if you've found your now. Enjoy that now while it's here. Have I found myself? No. That would be complete evolution, and I'm not going to say I'm there yet. Having found myself would mean I'm done, that I'm finished growing. And I can assure you, I'm nowhere near done yet. I want you to know, though, that the most empowered moments from my life have been the ones where I've empowered myself. And I urge you to stop looking elsewhere for what you already know deep down is inside of you. Never lose yourself trying not to lose someone else. Your most empowered moments in life are going to be the ones where you empower yourself. Find your now, be content in the now, and don't worry about tomorrow. An uncertain future doesn't have to be scary. It can be really fucking exciting. This has been a Simon & Schuster Australia production of Then There Was Her, written and narrated by Sophie Keisha. Forward read by Jared Kasher. Copyright Sophie Kasher, 2022. Production copyright Simon & Schuster, Australia, 2022.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.